Before we begin, some people asked me about the reference of this passage which we read, the student and the guru samvad. It's from collected works of Sri Aurobindo, centenary edition, which is actually called as SABCL, Sri Aurobindo Birth Centenary Library. It would be there in most of the, I think, centers. And this is volume 12. And page number is 475. And now, of course, there is a new set which has come out, and Ish Upanishad has come out. Has come out? And in that, one would find it in these sections, the Isha Vash Upanishad, and it's a form of student and guru commentary, but I don't know the page number in that. But it's anyways a very beautiful, extremely beautiful booklet. I often feel it's like a small handy booklet where Sri Aurobindo, in the form of a student guru dialogue, he reveals the truth of each of the passages or each of the sub slokas of Isha Upanishad in a language which is very easily comprehensible to the modern mind. He deals with issues which modern mind can raise, including science and other comparisons. And there are some passages of exquisite power and beauty, like this one which we read, you know. So in the SABCL edition, it's volume 12, page 475. Now we come back to the birth of Savitri. In book 1, canto 1, these are the three things which Sri Aurobindo reveals, and through these, actually he reveals the whole book. That's why there is a line in book 1, canto 1, almost that day the epiphany was disclosed. Almost that day, everything, because the first dawn contains as if in itself the hope for all future dawns. If once light can pierce through the darkness of night and illumine a small little corner of earth, then the possibility of light entering earth has become feasible. So we find that in book 1, canto 1, first he gives us the background of the drama. Later on, he will take us to that point exactly where the drama is taking place. But he would start with the entire cosmos, because after all, it's the divine writing a poem. So for the divine, the whole universe is a stage. At one place, he describes the universe as a vast gymnasium of his works of might. So this is how he would describe. There is the stage is set. The stage is this earth, which is moving, spinning through the soulless void, and slowly light breaks upon it. And as light breaks, there is hope and joy. And along with hope and joy, there is also the call to labor. And he speaks about man lifting up the burden of his fate. So on page 6, we have a very nice description of our life. If we think that Sri Aurobindo did not know what we are, here is a beautiful description. Last 6 lines in the first passage. You know, it almost one can picturize it as a stage in which first you have a little light which illumines one small place which is very beautiful, and then the light floods the whole stage, and then you see that people are engaged in all kinds of things. So here, now that light floods the whole stage, once more the rumor of the speed of life, line 3, pursued the cycles of her blinded quest, all sprang to their unvarying daily acts. So typical of all of us. Morning we get up to our unvarying daily acts. The 1,000 peoples of the soil and tree, obeyed the unforeseeing instant's urge. And this is really Sri Aurobindo's humor. As we say, Sri Aurobindo's humor is, Savitri is full of Sri Aurobindo's humor. This is the touch of his humor. And leader here with his uncertain mind. So typical of all the leaders. I think he was forcing all the leaders which are going to come. We should not be dismayed when we see leaders with their uncertain mind. Man is a leader with his uncertain mind. Where does mind knows? It knows not even the step in front, as he would tell us in Savitri. And leader here with his uncertain mind, alone, who stares at the future's covered face. In Greek mythology, the goddess of fate, Ananke, she is the last one to get dissolved. Her face is always covered. The gods have not seen her. Because even the gods' fate, she knows. Even they do not know their fate. And after all are absorbed, at the end of a cycle, everyone is, all the gods are dissolved into Zeus. She is the last one to be dissolved, to be absorbed. So, alone who stares at the future's covered face, man lifted up the burden of his fate. And Sri Aurobindo knew this very well. It's a story we should remember again and again. In Baroda, when Sri Aurobindo saw a lady crossing the road, trying to lift up a heap of wood, and the Maharaja suddenly goes up to her and lifts it for her and puts it on the lady's head. And as the lady walks, he also holds her hand and escorts her, comes back, and as typical of all of us, looks towards Sri Aurobindo for approval of his great act. How generous of me, what a good I have done today. I am a good man, after all, not so bad. Sri Aurobindo smiles. Why, sir? No comments from you? Have I not done something nice? Yes, yes, anybody would do that. Not worthy of a king. Not worthy of a king? Oh, as a king I shouldn't have lifted? You also think like everybody? Not worthy of a king? No, no, I don't mean that way. You are the king of this place. In your kingdom, there is an old lady who has to do this every day. Do you deserve to be a king? Of course, he doesn't say that. It's implied, not worthy of a king. So what should a king do? He gets the hint. He calls her next day, talks to her. What is her problem? Why this old lady has to lift the burden of the logs every day? And sees to it that her problem is taken care of, that for the rest of her life, she doesn't have to do it. So, great saints came and told man, please lift the burden of your fate. But I will do one thing. Hold your hand and take you from this side to the other side. Sri Aurobindo would tell us that's not a solution. So when the king comes, he tries to see why man has to lift the burden of his fate. That's why mother says, my child, I have come to incarnate grace, not justice. Don't come to me and cry for justice. He has done this to me and why he is prospering. So mother says, if I were to incarnate justice, none of you will be able to stand. Ask for grace. Grace, grace. So man lifted up the burden of his fate, but there is someone else who is awake in the fields. And that's how he introduces Savitri in this great drama, the real drama of life, that amidst all of us, she awakes. And Savitri too awoke among these tribes. The very first line makes us, it touches us that she identifies herself with the human, wakes up amidst them. She does not mind becoming this or that. When we read mother's life in the early part, she was born, of course, in a reasonably well-to-do family, but for various reasons, at a very young age, at a tender age, maybe 7 or 8 or 9, the family lost a substantial amount of money. So much so that while as a child she had to move in a carriage, she could go in a carriage to see a circus. Now she had to walk, she couldn't afford another pair of shoes. So that one pair she had to keep carefully and polish it so that they look new. So she would walk like that for days and sometimes without shoes. So she went through that kind of hardship as any of us would go through. And yet she could give us hope. And Savitri too awoke among these tribes and hastened to join the brilliant summoner's chant, the chant of the morning. How Sri Aurobindo would see the morning, we have it on just the previous page, which Sri Aurobindo has described as a real experience which he had several times. When somebody questioned, this is a poetic image. On the previous page, page 4, Sri Aurobindo speaks of last 5 lines, all grew a consecration and a rite. In the morning, he wakes up and sees a vast yagna going on. We see a yagya only in some sacred places where bricks are laid and fire is burnt. He looks out of his window. This literally, in one of his letters he writes, several times when I looked out of my window in Baroda, here and elsewhere, he had this experience. What is that experience? All grew a consecration and a rite. Air was a vibrant link between earth and heaven, the wide-winged hymn of a great priestly wind. No music system those days. There were no bhajans, but yet he was hearing hymns in the wind. Arose and failed upon the altar hills. The high boughs prayed in a revealing sky. The tree was praying towards the sky. This is how he experienced. So the summoner calls Savitri also, and Savitri goes. And how do we hear the summoner's chant when morning comes and calls us to the labor? What is the kind of labor we engage into, and what is the kind of labor Savitri was engaging herself into? This is what is shown here. And lured by the beauty of the apparent ways, acclaimed their portion of ephemeral joy. We run. Morning, there is a call of the sun. And we run to the mud and jump into the mire and feel, so nice. Out of the mire, I could pick out something shining. I think this is the coin I want for today. But Savitri, akin to the eternity when she came, no part she took in this small happiness. She would tell us what she was doing as a child. She said, whenever I had a sorrow or a difficulty to meet, she was experiencing even at the age of 3, a light descending into her. She would withdraw into that light, nourish herself with that. And what she would do when she would have time, instead of getting bored, she would project herself on the screen. No cinema, this was perhaps the forerunner of a cinema, like Da Vinci dreamt of the flying machine. She anticipated the cinema. So her own different part she was projecting on the screen, and she was looking at them and making them pass through the psychic light, the master director. Look, this is casting a shadow. Look, that is casting a shadow. And later on she would tell us, this is one of the beautiful techniques to become sincere. We look for technique. This is a way of becoming sincere, that every day we look for a short while. It just takes about 15 minutes to review the day and see what were the things which cast a strong shadow, at least that we can see. Oh, this moment I really did something, thought something, spoke something which was not at all becoming of my goal, which took me so far away from that which I aspire for. So here, no part she took in this small happiness, a mighty stranger in the human field. Later she would tell us, one of the signs that we are getting ready for the spiritual life. And somebody asked, what are the signs by which one can know that one is getting ready for the spiritual life? So she says, one of the signs is that you feel strange amidst everything. And second sign is that you don't mind being lonely is not a problem. Otherwise we run from loneliness. We want to seek something or the other, or at least engage our mind. But you don't run from that. You seek that solitude because it's so nourishing. But one of the signs is you feel strange amidst things here, because that is how she would describe the psychic being. The psychic feels that. It feels so strange amidst all these surroundings. That's why it is shy and retreats. When Shubhendu speaks about the psyche, he says, divine's last refuge from world's profaning touch. He runs away and hides. But precisely for that reason, it must put off her veil and step into common nature's crowded rooms. This is what he wants the psychic to do. A mighty stranger in the human field, the embodied guest within made no response. The call that wakes the leap of human mind. Our human mind leaps at appearances. Whether there is a match or there is a political debate or there is a film, we leap towards it because it engages us, and we engage ourselves into an animated discussion over who is going to win or who is going to lose. Whether godlike game is won or lost, that is not important. This is what our mind leaps. So what a beautiful, it's actually a great Upanishadic truth. The Kain Upanishad deals with it. It starts with this question: what sets the mind to leap as an arrow to its target? This is how it starts. So Shubhendu says, the call that wakes the leap of human mind, its checkered, eager motion of pursuit, its fluttering hued illusion of desire. What is illusion? Desire is the illusion. It's not objects that are in illusion. Desire is an illusion because that is just the wrong way to actually enjoy anything. If desire reaches to possess objects, we lose it the moment we hold it in our hand. It slips from our grasp. So what is the right way? To enjoy the world as the divine enjoys. Ten tyaktena bhunjita ma gridaha kasya svidhanam. The divine enjoys as that consciousness which takes delight in all things. Again, the mother would explain to us practical steps to experience delight. This is one of aphorisms of Sri Aurobindo, where Sri Aurobindo speaks about what is the goal. He says, if in a honeycomb, every little comb and every drop of honey were to taste all other drops, and each, all and all could taste the each, the sweetness of each, that is the kind of manifold delight towards which this creation is moving. So naturally it's an image. We don't even know that delight of the drop of honey that we are to taste the delight of all. So they ask mother how to reach that state. She gives simple steps. First of all, do not seek pleasure. First step. Why? Not because it's a taboo, not because there is anything morally wrong about it. The last thing she spoke about was moral and taboos and such things. She said, because it is a great illusion. It traps you. She says, pain is many times a grace, but pleasure is an illusion because it traps you, and you seek and you hold and it loses. You seek, you hold, it loses. Therefore, actually, for practical purposes, it's not that one has to let go of pleasure to become lifeless, delightless, joyless, and become, you know, niswad, nispand. It's not that state. Because when we let go of pleasure, then we spontaneously enter into delight. Of course, he speaks of another step, then you must grow wide. Because if we are small, delight cannot be experienced. So these are the steps she gives, and she gives actually a whole passage where she says what are the whole steps to be taken. Now Savitri knows it right from her childhood. Its fluttering hued illusion of desire visited her heart like a sweet alien note, Time's message of brief light was not for her. She made such beautiful paintings. Somebody once asked the mother, "Mother, we should get some of your paintings which are there, here and there, before they get spoiled." Mother would say, "My child, we live in eternity. And we rush to write a book, to print it, and we are eagerly waiting. When will be 21st February? My book is going to come out, announce it, and tell everybody, you know, my book has come out, my book has come out." Here is someone who wrote all these for his own delight and won't even care. So that is the kind of consciousness. Why for this fleeting desire? It's fluttering, you delusion of desire, visited her heart like a sweet alien note. It visited her, but like an alien note. She knew this is not what she is. Time's message of brief light was not for her. We know that how mother was, you know, offered even to take over Shantiniketan when Tagore met her in Tokyo, and he wanted her to take over Shantiniketan. She refused. Because something else she wants to do. But that's something else, a home, a bed for the golden river song, a home for the deathless fire. In her, there was the anguish of the gods. We read yesterday the path of the titans and the path of the gods. Both feel restrained and restricted in the human frame. It's typical. If one brings, you know, a greater consciousness than the earthly mold, there is a sense of restlessness, because both know that this frame cannot fulfill that which I am seeking. The anguish of the titan is that he feels his frame is too small for the limitless enjoyment that he wants, egoistic enjoyment. So he does all kinds of things to be able to seek his egoistic enjoyment in spite of that human frame. And therefore, books like Spiritual Ways to Become Successful, Spiritual Ways to Become Wealthy and Rich, become a hit. Because the titan wants that. What is that way? He also seeks spiritual light and power, but for his egoistic enjoyment. Who would do more meditation than Ravana? We will fall flat. 10,000 years of tapasya, offering his head. And of course his two brothers and Hiranyakashyap and Hiranyaksh. At the end of it, what they were seeking? My ego. So the divine said, okay, have at least 10 heads. The amount you are seeking, one head cannot fulfill. So 10 heads you must have at least. So what mother says, what is the true gesture? True gesture is self-giving. Don't seek things like, I will become immortal. Why? Because then at least I will not die. And, you know, I'll enjoy limitlessly. We don't realize that that kind of immortality is a curse. We'll become like Ashwatthama, roaming around the world with no home to stay. Because we'll be driven out by the great-grandchildren at least. Maybe by the grandchildren themselves. And we would be living alone, old people. So we have to first have that consciousness. But there is another kind of anguish. The titan wants to increase the powers for egoistic enjoyment. But gods to feel the anguish, they feel the anguish of the imperfect mold. They feel within themselves all the beauty, all the light, all the joy, all the truth that they bring, but find the mold is not able to express it. And so with the collectivity around, they are instinct with a sense of equality, they are instinct with a sense of brotherhood, they are instinct with a sense of freedom, but they see all around just the contrary. So they have this anguish. All these godly beings were also very passionate in their nature. They were not quietistic people sitting meditating all the time, not opening their eyes. How does Sri Aurobindo describe Savitri's coming? Before that, what is this anguish of the gods? What do they do? Page 280. Of course, there are vital gods and there are mental gods, and these are gods beyond the greater mind, the heavens of the ideal. What are they doing? Are they just meditating to merge into the absolute? Page 280. Almost in the middle. A thunder rolling mid the hills of God. Their voice is like a thunder, like a tempest. A thunder rolling mid the hills of God. Tireless, severe is their tremendous voice. Exceeding us, to exceed ourselves they call. It's very difficult to live in proximity with a godly being. Very difficult. That's why we find in God's labor, Sri Aurobindo saying that, come, let us slay him. This is how the voices tell him. Come, let us slay him. So that we finally can do what we want to do. And we are released from the curb of his wide, white peace. His peace was a curb on what we wanted to do. And in Book 1, Canto 1, we will find a similar thing. Page 5. I'm just flipping through because it connects so well. Hard is it to persuade earth nature's change. Mortality bears ill the eternal's touch. It fears the pure divine intolerance. Can the divine be intolerant? He has infinite patience, but he wants things to change. At one place, mother says, they will say I was very ambitious. She says, we are not here to do the things that are done everywhere else. That's why we don't have any of those forms and systems that are done everywhere else. We are here to do what is not done elsewhere. And then she reminds us, there are things not done elsewhere and we may do it as a fashion, just for the novelty of things. So she says, we are here to do what is not done elsewhere because they do not have the idea that it can be done. So she brings, it fears the pure divine intolerance of that assault of ether and of fire. It murmurs at its sorrowless happiness. You want to give us delight, pure delight. You mean all the tragicomedy drama of life will be gone? The rasa of sorrow and suffering. Earth's grain needs the sap of suffering and of tears. That will be gone from us? Oh, we enjoy it so much. Something in us loves to be a martyr. Something in us loves tragedy. And so you are telling us of sorrowless happiness. Want us to give away pleasure and all these little things? No, this is so nice and dear. It fears its pure divine intolerance. And we can go back to this thunder of the gods. Page 280. Far from our eager reach, those summits live. Too lofty for our mortal strength and height. Hardly in a dire ecstasy of toil, climbed by the spirit's naked athlete will. Austere, intolerant, they claim from us efforts too lasting for our mortal nerves. They know us. Sri Aurobindo knows us. He knows what we are and he knows where we have to go. What kind of effort? A constant vigilance, constant aspiration. And it's so nice to read it. And we'll say, nothing, you don't have to do anything, just remember and offer. And we hear so nicely, when we go out, we remember ourselves and offer a cup of tea to ourselves. It's so natural to us. Efforts too strong. They know it. Nothing wrong with a cup of tea. But if we can remember the divine and offer. The problem is we forget the divine. So he's saying, efforts too lasting for our mortal nerve, our hearts cannot cleave to, nor our flesh support. It breaks down in the effort. When Nishikanto, the great poet, came here, he wanted to be join the ashram, and Sri Aurobindo would tell him, look, if you remain at Shantiniketan, you will become world famous. You will write very beautiful poetry. Here also you will write beautiful poetry. But if you stay there, you have a lot of world fame waiting for you. Okay, sir, what about here? If you come here, I am afraid within a couple of years, all kinds of illnesses may come over you. Don't tell me later on that I have dyspepsia and I have diabetes and I have hypertension. Don't tell me later on. Nishikanto is a bhakta. He says, what is there to fear? At the home of Mahakali, let me live and die. Okay, come. Sure enough, he would sometimes joke and say, my body is a laboratory of all the illnesses. When somebody would move around him with a, you know, knee pain, it is actually documented that somebody was going in front of him with a knee pain and telling him, oh, I have so much pain and all this. So when he goes away, Nishikanto, he laughs and tells one of his friends, look, he's stumbling with a knee pain. He has given me all possible illnesses in this body. Still he could laugh. This is the kind of consciousness. Why? Because the flesh cracks. The flesh cannot bear that ecstasy, that love, that tremendous light, that truth, that force. It cannot bear. The whole software and hardware has to be changed. When someone asks Sri Aurobindo, oh, what is there? You have to bring down the supramental, everything will be fine. He says, oh, so simple as that. It's like pulling 1,000 watt or maybe 10,000 watt electricity where our wires are meant to hold only 100, not even that, and our bulbs only 25 watt bulbs. He says, your bulb will blow off, your lines will blow off, and you don't have the reserve generators. Let me first make the bulbs and the thing ready. Supermind is there in the waiting. It's come down to earth. I have put it in the subtle physical world. And so he tells earth, I have wrapped my dream in a silver air between the gold and the blue. And wrapped them gently and laid them bare. My jewel dreams of you. Where he has kept them? I have in the silver air, in the spiritualized mind, in little above the mind, between the blue and the gold. The blue is the mental consciousness and the gold is the supramental. This is not Sri Aurobindo's blue he is speaking of. Mother has spoken about this. I have left them there. One day, there will walk the living truth of you. He's telling earth, one day. Why? Because I have to do a lot of cleaning work. So supermind has descended. Where do we see those golden glorious bodies? Of course, some of us start seeing our own golden glorious bodies. That's the easiest thing to see. Every day we see in the mirror, is my body becoming golden and glorious? And mother would tell us, oh, the new race, wait for at least 1,000 years. Why? Because where is the flesh ready to bear it? A mold made ready, a form made ready with 1,000 births is the living mold of a supreme descent. Rare is the cup fit for love's nectar wine. As rare a soul that can hold God's birth. It is said that just to make mother's body physical frame, the universal mother had to get the best of elements, but within this old creation, to create a body which could hold that flame. And in Savitri, this is spoken of. Sri Aurobindo speaks of how the universal mother created that frame so that that light could be held. And she is now creating bodies and frames which can hold that. So that's why she tells us, which all of us forget, at least I forget, that do some exercise rather than only sitting and doing meditation, because everything is fine, but you have to be fit to hold that light. And so, instead of opening a great meditation hall with all the figures of gods and goddesses, what she is hurrying to open before the supramental descent, she opens a playground. She says, meditation do later. Let me have a playground where you people can at least rest. I will do. I will put it. You are open to me. I know it. You have faith in my grace. I know that. I don't doubt all that. Even if you don't love, I love you. That much is fine. But how will I pour? My child, you are so small. Your bodies are not ready. The moment you try to, and that's why she says, do not pull. If you pull, you will break. So what is to be done? Give yourself, give yourself, give yourself. Repeatedly she was saying self-giving. Why? Not because divine wants us to give himself. Not because of his own sake. Like people say, oh, divine wants worship. No, it's not that. It's because we will receive much better. It's for our good. If we don't want to give, we are free. We can pull everything and believe we are, you know, living in some supramental illusion. Human mind can create everything. Our hearts cannot cleave to, nor our flesh support. Only the eternal strength in us can dare to attempt the immense adventure of that climb and the sacrifice of all we cherish here. Only the eternal strength. So, Sri Aurobindo would tell us, this yoga, we arrive at the aim of the Tantra through the method of Vedanta. First conquer that knowledge of the One. First be rooted in the foundations of the One. First learn to see the Divine everywhere, in victory and defeat, in joy and in sorrow. Not only when everything is fine, oh, Mother's grace is so nice, my son has got selected. Mother's grace is also there when he does not get selected. Mother's grace is not only there when that medicine hits me so well, or without medicine I get cured. Mother's grace is also there when the doctor experiments with medicines, which they often do without telling us, and it doesn't hit, misses very badly, and I have all the side effects. That too is grace. And what can see that? Only the eternal strength in us can dare. That eternal strength, that anguish she gets, she wants to change everything. And she doesn't want to escape. She doesn't enter and say, oh, this is so bad, so ugly, I want to leave this and go. She says, this is so ugly, so bad, let us make it beautiful. In her, there was the anguish of the gods. And we can end with that passage where her birth is spoken of. Yes, there we are, the vision and the boon. When Sri Aurobindo pleads our case, Ashupati pleads the human case, please come down, you can change everything. Please come down. So what is coming down? What does it mean to turn to the mother? What does it mean to be partners of her joy, of her work? What does it mean to be an instrument of her will? What kind of things we are going to face? What kind of divine assault are we going to take? Page 346. Who is she? O strong forerunner, I have heard thy cry. In the myth, we have the story of the legend of Durga. How is Durga created? Durga is not created by some ascetics meditating and creating something out of themselves. One ascetic meditated for many years and he created a Urvashi out of him. All that he had kept within, he could create and send as a gift to Indra. That will not do. So the gods meditate and put all their energies, and a form manifests. And what is that? All the gods, we see. O strong forerunner, I have heard thy cry. One shall descend and break the iron law. Change nature's doom by the lone spirit's power. A limitless mind that can contain the world. And we keep writing, the mother of Sri Aurobindo Ashram, Pondicherry. And within her heart, Sri Aurobindo would tell us, the whole world could take refuge in her single heart. In fact, in one of her statements, she says, I wish if I could, I would shelter everybody here. But my means are limited. She laments it. I lament my limitations. My means are physical means. I cannot give house to everybody, and I cannot say, that, okay, Pondicherry is a small place. So what she creates? She creates this whole world into her living ashram. That's what she's trying to create. And she speaks about it in her conversation in 1958, that now the ashram is not confined to just the boundaries of the ashram. Wherever in the world, there are those who have turned to the teaching of Sri Aurobindo, they have all been linked together. She speaks of it in the collective yoga, in a conversation of 1958, because a limitless mind that can contain the world, a sweet and violent heart of ardent calms. God and violence, my God. Gods are supposed to be very non-violent. Don't they come to tell us, be non-violent. Don't even hurt an insect. Don't even do this. If Hitler comes and shows his sword in front of you, bare your heart and say, kill my body because I am non-violent. That's what God should say. But here is another God. All might moved by the passions of the God shall come. All mights and greatnesses shall join in her. Beauty shall walk celestial on the earth. But in the supramental truth, they are reconciled. That's the beauty. They're all reconciled. Beauty shall walk celestial on the earth. Delight shall sleep in the cloud net of her hair, and in her body, as on his homing tree, immortal love shall beat his glorious wings. So this is what she brings. And Sri Aurobindo is introducing us to this divine incarnate. And how is introducing? He is first introducing the core. Then in the next canto, he introduces her personality. And then he introduces her outer being. How different from us? We first see the outer personality and say, yes, yes, he could be divine. He looks divine. What does divine look like? We don't know. He can be divine. And here is Sri Aurobindo telling us the secret truth. What is that secret truth? Page 6. In her there was the anguish of the gods, imprisoned in her transient human mold, the deathless conquered by the death of things. It knows itself deathless and sees it's stuck in a mold bound by death. And therefore what it does, it doesn't just break the mold and go away. It says, this too must become what I am in reality within. The deathless conquered by the death of things, a vaster nature's joy had once been hers, but long could keep not its gold heavenly hue, or stood upon this brittle earthly base, a narrow movement on time's deep abysm. Life's fragile littleness denied the power. it must have been a wrestle for her. We think it's so easy. Oh, divine is divine. He takes human birth, so easy for him. This is the true renunciation. We are very happy. We say we have renounced this, we have renounced that. What renunciation we have done? We have renounced darkness for light. Nothing great about that. Here is someone renouncing light and delight to identify with darkness. And the darkness won't accept. It says, no, no, don't come. You are going to do something cheating. I am not going to play a game with you. You have, every time you have come, you have done this. I am not going to admit you in. The proud and life's fragile littleness denied the power, the proud and conscious wideness and the bliss. So we keep tying her into small bonds. A mother who satisfies our little pleasures. A mother who is this, a mother who is that. She had brought with her into the human form the calm delight that weds one soul to all. And we want to make groups and factions and sub-factions and sub-sub-factions. And here is she brings the calm delight that weds one soul to all. It's so amazing that people who couldn't see each other eye to eye, but when they came to her, everybody loved her and she loved everybody. That is the kind of love she brought upon earth. And that is the kind of love to which she wants us to rise. This is the symbol, God's own example. Shobindu speaks about it in Essays on the Gita. It's not just a freak phenomena. He says it is possible. The calm delight that weds one soul to all. What a beautiful wedding. Weds one soul to all, the key to the flaming doors of ecstasy.